Welcome to Old Nailers Natters. That's a nice little tongue twister, isn't it? This is like walking out at Wembley Stadium, you know, and I've come up and I picked up my phone and the first thing I said was, yabba dabba doo, I've been waiting for this phone call. Happiest day that I've my life. So Crown Owl sent me a lovely email yesterday saying, this is unprecedented, Chris. Thought, I'm going to bring sofas in. I'll get a company to buy me two sofas. I'll get Domino's to deliver pizzas. We'll have ice cold lemonade.
Nailers Natter, just talking to teachers.
Talking to teachers about academic research and evidence-based practice with continuing professional development at PNA1977 on Twitter.
Nailers Natter, just talking to teachers.
Research by the Seaside is back. Yep, you heard it right. Research Ed Blackpool returns for its third year, following enormously successful conferences in 2018 and 2019. Now, as you'll know, both of those conferences sold out pretty quickly, so book early to avoid disappointment. As always, expect for an exciting day packed full of research-informed practice from speakers from both primary and secondary backgrounds. The date for your diary, Saturday 9th of July 2022, and the location is South Shore Academy, St Anne's Road, Blackpool. That's Research at Blackpool 2022. Hope to see you there.
Nailers Natter, just talking to teachers.
Nailers Natter the book. Ideas and advice from the collective wisdom of teachers. Nailers Natter brings together a wealth of advice from the most influential voices in education today. In this exciting, one-of-a-kind book, Phil Naylor revisits the very best interviews from 3 years of education podcasting, drawing on the advice and opinions from some of the world's most innovative educators. Available now for pre-order from Amazon and out on July 7th, 2022.
Talking to teachers about educational books, why we love them, and how we use them in our classrooms. With guest authors, publishers, podcasters, and of course, teachers.
Okay, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Nailers Natter. I'm delighted to be joined by Chris Dyson, who is with us to talk about his book today. And you can probably see it, Chris, in the background here. It's Parklands, A School Built on Love. And just before we get into talking about this book and what a fantastic bestseller it is already, and bear in mind this is in week 1 of release, you can see, for those of you that are being treated to the video podcast, that in tribute to Chris today, I am wearing the Chris Dyson waistcoat as well. Not wearing it as well as he is, listener, if you can see it, but at least we're going for it as well. So a formal welcome, Chris. Welcome to Nailers Natter. Welcome to all Nailers Natters. That's a nice little tongue twister, isn't it? In the afternoon things. And all the listeners and things, really honoured and proud that you've invited me on the show today. Thank you. And like I said, thanks again for being here. So we're going to get into the book. So like I said, it's Parklands, A School Built on Love, and it's a bestseller. It's sold out already in week 1 of publication. So congratulations on that. And what a great book it is. You know, I say this every week, Chris, but, you know, I go out and sometimes I get sent books and sometimes I go out and get books. And this is one that as soon as I got it, I had it on pre-order, ready to go, got it, read it within the day, read it again, and I've read it and mentioned it to a couple of SLT here, because as listeners all know, I'm working in a school in a similar context to yourself, in terms of right in the heart and the centre of Blackpool, so it was something that kind of really resonated with me. So I'm going to get into that, but before we do, I normally do a gentle introductory question, but I'm going to do a little bit of a different one with you, if that's okay.
Wonderful.
So I was interested to learn more about you, and kind of the roots of love, if you like, as you call it in the book. So tell listeners a little bit about how your childhood and your childhood experiences shaped the leader that you are today.
Great, and a great opening question, because this is why I'm liking doing this today, because we've got no script, we're going live and raw and things straight from the heart and things. But, you know, growing up, you know, we didn't have a lot when we grew up. We had lots and lots of love in the house. My dad left home when I was 7 years old. Never to be seen again. And I had my brother and my sister and my mum, bless her, was a student who was trying to better herself so that we'd have a better sort of life growing up. So although, you know, when it came to Christmas times, we'd have one present and the traditional, for the older listeners out there, an apple and an orange and things like that. So we only had limited sort of presents. But one thing we did have, we had lots of love, and I love using that phrase at Christmas time. It's not what you've got present-wise, around that Christmas tree. It's about what family you've got around. And we were blessed to have a beautiful grandpa and nan who were there as sort of second sets of parents for us. So I was brought up on love. And then when I took over Parklands, you know, we're situated on one of Europe's largest council estates. Money is exceptionally tight and things are going to get worse, I feel, with a recession looming and things. So when I came into this school, I mean, education was my sort of way forward. I'm looking at my lovely wife as a teacher as well. So our children today can practically have whatever they like for Christmas and birthdays. If my daughter runs out of a reading book, she's on Amazon and someone would deliver the next day. But not everyone's as lucky as we are now. And I wanted to go back to my sort of roots. When I took over this school, I thought, I want these children to have an experience as much as my own children get. And if that meant, and I'm sure we'll touch on it today, if that meant going out to get businesses to sponsor a year three, a year four, a year five, and a year six residential, whether it's shutting down the school in July so every child gets to go to Bridlington for the day and splash about in the sea, have an ice cream, they can do that. And I didn't want money being a barrier to these children. I wanted them to feel they were valued, feel they were loved, because again, we'll come on to this later on, but when I took over here, there was 150 exclusions, there was a padded cell, and you've not misheard that, there was a padded cell for the naughtiest kids to be put in. There was exclusion rooms where all the naughtiest children wanted to be because it was 17 of the naughtiest kids with one teaching assistant. And boy, could these children throw chairs. There were kids outside on the roof playing tig or tag, you know, and I thought this ruling a school by using a stick just isn't working. So let's rip it up and let's start something else. Let's build a school built on love, on respect, on values. And, you know, we move forward to the end of my eighth year now, outstanding from Ofsted. I've had one exclusion in 8 years, you know, and it's a place where children want to be. And that's the sort of big sort of drive that I've had here at Parklands.
Brilliant. And we'll get to this later, Chris, in terms of, you know, how you serve your community. And there's some great stories in the book, isn't there? I particularly enjoyed the one about the painting and decorating apprentices and then closing the whole organisation down to bring everybody into paint the school. I just thought it's such a great example of community that you've built there. So for you've touched on it a bit there, but for listeners who aren't aware, and again, that's why I'm good to speak to you today, because we are very much a school that serve our community. You know, we don't have any school buses here. Everybody walks to school. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got, like I said, 75% and counting PP students here as well. So we kind of understand what you're talking about. But for those listeners who aren't aware about Parklands, tell us a little bit about where it was, where it is now, and a little bit about the Seacroft Estate in Leeds as well.
So as I said, Parklands is situated on the Seacroft Estate, which is one of Europe's largest council estates. The sort of community, it's a beautiful community, but you had to sort of tap into that community feel by sharing the positiveness and sharing the experience, as opposed to giving the parents a bad experience by just pulling them in to tell them what children have done incorrectly all day. And using the great inspirational Paul Dix, you know, as a motivator, bringing up parents just to celebrate what these children have achieved and things. When I took over, standards were rock bottom. We were in the bottom 10% in reading, writing and maths and everything. The local authority graded the school inadequate, which again, and hopefully this will come through this sort of podcast today, I take any negative and try and put a positive spin on it. So when the local authority said, you are inadequate, if you had an Ofsted now, you know, you're looking at academy status. I thought, well, the positive is that I get 23 days extra support from the authority, which is really going to help shape our future.
Nailers, Natter, just talking to teachers.
And I also started thinking, and you know, if we got made into an academy, and obviously the first person to go, if you moved into an academy status, is the existing head, I thought I'd lose nothing because I was fortunate enough, I won a Teacher of the Year back in 2004. So I thought I could go back into the classroom and be an effective deputy head teacher and things. So I welcomed the challenge. They offered a 25% bonus enhancement when the advert went out because they wanted to attract a real super head to come into school. They didn't particularly want me because they wanted an established head and I'd never been a head before. But unfortunately, because of the school, there was only two people that applied and I was one of them. lots of people said, you can't go for that job as your first job. You can't go for that. You know, you need something to step into. You need something to build upon. And I love a challenge. I've always loved sport, and I've always been loved being told, you can't do this, you can't do that. And that gives you that inner grit and that inner sort of determination to prove people wrong and things. So, and as I said, we fast forward now to 2022. And we were lucky enough, we got an outstanding in Ofsted in 2017. Can't wait for them to come back next year or the year after. And we're all ready for it. We don't do things for Ofsted, but we do things for the children. But if you do things for the children and your preps and everything, it means an Ofsted inspection runs sort of itself. And most significantly, we are in the top. We're in the top 5% of schools in the country. We're in the top 1% really in maths and top 5% in reading and writing. And when I say, given the deprivation and the high pupil premium numbers that we've got, when you walk into our school and you're seeing our little five-year-olds in year one, there you go, they're that big, our little five-year-olds in year one, blitzing out all the times tables, it just puts that wow factor on people's faces thinking, how on earth have these kids got these times tables so quick and so accurate and things such as that. So when I was lucky enough, I had the lovely Reece Dinsdale in school 2 weeks ago, From Home to Roost and the film ID, and is the only soap person who's ever been killed off in Emmerdale and Coronation Street, and now is starting directing Coronation Street this week and things. And when he came in into Assembly, which absolutely wowed him so much so he's now our patron of the school, he said, I'll play these year ones at times tables. You could see he was stood there thinking, I'll let him win the first couple and then I'll come back and I'll show them. Really competitive he was. But, you know, it was flabbergasted. He's thinking, these kids are only five and they're knowing all these times tables, and I can't even get the number in my head before they're saying it and things. So, so standards have gone through the roof. And again, we ain't a testing school. You know, we started SATS practice, which I don't agree with this year at all. Started SATS practice literally 3 weeks ago after Easter. Blitzed it. And as I said, SATs are finished today. Whee! So now we've just got to wait for July the 9th when the results come out and things. So,
brilliant. And it's your enthusiasm, Chris, is just absolutely infectious. And there are a couple of things. Quickly before we forget, let's give a shout out to Paul Dix.
We love Paul Dix.
Paul Dix is still our most listened to episode. Yeah, absolutely. I can do it, but I can do the same. We'll give it a treat, shall we, for people who are watching this on the podcast as well. But yeah, so in terms of Paul's work, obviously everyone knows about Paul's work, but he was so kind to me. So I mean, obviously I started a podcast which was evidence and research based podcast, you know, but I've always admired Paul and his work, and I asked him would he come on. He agreed, he came on. It's still by far the most downloaded show we've ever done, and he gave me a chance on Teacher Hug Radio. I know you're still on there and doing bits and pieces on Teacher Hug. He gave me a chance for that. He's still dead supportive in messages and things like that. So big shout out to Paul Dix as well.
He helped change my life because he put belief in. He came up to visit once, just wanted to see what all this hullabaloo about Parklands was like. You know, when you see a grown man and such an inspiration have a tear in his eye and have to come in my office to wipe the tears and blow his nose and things, just saying, I've never seen anything like it and things. And I said, he's guided me, you know, he's been a really true friend of the school and things. And we love having him come up and visit us.
Definitely. And I take his work out to research ed conferences, Chris, all over the place. And people, you know, there's this false dichotomy in behaviour, which you might get into around you're either in this camp or you're in that camp. But it's not, it doesn't need to be the case.
No,
it doesn't need to be the case at all. And, you know, hopefully I've helped a little bit in furthering some of the stuff that he's talked about at these conferences. So thanks again, Paul. And the other thing was, Chris, was about Ofsted. And I love the picture in the book that's showing you. And I can't remember what I feel like you said yabba dabba do or something. Is that right?
Yeah, that's totally true. Because as I said, I can't wait for the next Ofsted next year or the year after. But I've been so geared up for this sort of Ofsted. It was the same team that the local authority had sort of put as inadequate that came with me on this journey, you know. And we were so close. And I was just every day I was thinking, oh, it's 11 o'clock and my phone's not rang. And then I was actually flying drones in year two. And everyone, the radios are going, where's Chris? And then they found me, you know, and everyone's going, run to your room. I'm saying, I'm great. And I'm savouring this moment. This is like walking out at Wembley Stadium, you know, and I've come up and I've picked up my phone. And the first thing I said was, yabba dabba do. I've been waiting for this phone call for absolutely ages and things. Anyway, I think it's one time they had to cut me off after about an hour and a half. They say, no, you can't tell us anymore. We'll come and see it all tomorrow and things. So, but no, it was something that I was really, really, really looking forward to, because I know Ofsted get a lot of bad press, you know, and and some of the things are justified. But for me personally, Ofsted really shaped my sort of teaching future, whether it was back in 97 when I was just a class teacher, to when I had one been a maths leader and then one being a deputy head. And again, I always looked at the what you need to do next. And that was the sort of gear that I didn't want to see, oh, they do this brilliantly, they do that brilliantly. I always want to see what we can do next for the best of these children. So as I said, my relationship with Ofsted has always been great. I make people raise their eyebrows when I say, one day I may well be an Ofsted inspector. But that's further down the line and things. So.
Hey, I think you absolutely could. And I'd reflect that as well. We've had a recent inspection here. And again, you know, you flipped it into a positive thing and things you can use and take from that. So I would absolutely echo that as well. Right, on leadership, Chris. So chapter two, you talked about leadership. And something that struck me is you said that you wanted to be a teacher leading teachers. And I get the feeling that you could go into reception, year one, wherever it was, and deliver a great lesson. So how important was it for you to be a teacher leading teachers, not a spreadsheet manager or a half-baked visionary? And also one thing that I really loved, and I'm a deputy, and obviously deputies are predominantly the ones that are in school most of the time, mm-hmm. and they get dragged all over the place. But you said you like to lead by being there. So talk to us about how important that is.
So, well, first of all, I very, very rarely am not in school. I'm not one of these heads that go to this conference, that conference, go here, go there. I'd rather people come to see us. But, I mean, it's funny because when I first started, sort of 8 years ago, I'd been a working deputy head. So I did 0.5 deputy, 0.5 year six. And I came into a school where I knew standards had to be sort of lifted. And it was easy for me because I'd just come straight from the classroom. So what I was saying I wanted to do, I could teach, I could model. I was given a hit list of these staff have got to go and things, but I wanted everyone to have a clean slate. And one thing I've noticed as time's gone on is that you have there's a teacher who's the best at teaching maths. There's a teacher who's best at reading English. There's a teacher who's best at reading guided reading, a best art teacher, a best music teacher. So it's empowering these teachers to sort of model and showcase their sort of lessons. And as I said, when I first came in, I could work with all the teachers. I could do I would work on planning together, then I'd deliver the start, then I'd stay in there while they deliver the next part of the lesson. Then the following week, they'd do the start and I'd do the next part of the lesson. So it was definitely on that coaching sort of mentality that we wanted to get the very best out of these children. And I'm always a big believer of walking the walk if you're going to talk the talk. And now, funny you should say that I could go into reception now and teach this most wonderful lesson. I'm in a position now where I'm not the best teacher in this school anymore. My other teachers are. So it's these people now that do the model lessons, do the shared planning and sort of delivering. Because, you know, when you're wandering around school all day, you know, just doing times tables, dealing with this, dealing with that, but still in school, it's the teachers that are delivering these most wonderful, outstanding, energetic, challenging, but risk-taking sort of lessons. And it's an absolute pleasure to see how this entire staff has grown together as one.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay then, so we're on Thursday as we record this, so you're getting it obviously geared up and excited, especially if it's end of SATs, Chris, for Fun Day Friday tomorrow. Now, I love all the same kind of things. So we've mentioned your mutual love of waistcoats. I love the fact that you've got music pumping in, and I applaud your playlist as well, as someone who's done playlists on this podcast before. So tell us a little bit about how that came about, Fun Day Friday, about the playlist, and also, and you do it on Twitter sometimes, don't you, about the times table grand final. And you're still pretty hot, aren't you, on the times tables? I've seen you in those as well.
Massively. So it's a lovely hashtag Fun Day Friday, hashtag best seats in the House Assembly. And when I first started, I mean, I had to get hold of behaviour, first of all. So I used to just walk around school all day, every day. I wish I had me a stepometer back in those days and things, so covering miles. And then as I was walking around, I thought, I'll do what I always did as a deputy head, as a maths leader, as a year six teacher, year four teacher, etc. I'll just start doing times tables with them. And automatically, especially the boys, you know, there was just this, oh, 8, 8, 6, 4. And I thought, oh, that's great. So I was just walking in rooms doing these times tables. And then I thought, these kids are so brilliant at this that I'll move it into a Fun Day Friday, hashtag best seats in the House Assembly. And we'll have a showcase where all the class champions or play off every week. So you'd have year ones playing against year fours, year sixes and everything. Because it wasn't about winning the winning the trophy. It was about being class champion and getting your limited edition JoJo Bo styled times table certificate. And that was sort of the sort of inspiration behind that. And then watching the lovely Anton Deck, I saw that when they had the best seats in the House Assembly, I thought, I'm going to bring sofas and I'll get a company to buy me two sofas. I'll get Domino's to deliver pizzas. We'll have ice cold lemonade. So again, sort of building this up. So it ended up being a quarter past 2 till 3 o'clock assembly and then 2 o'clock till 3 o'clock, which was literally all singing, all dancing, where some kids had come out and do some dancing, some singing before we hit the writer of the week, the reader of the week, the star of the week, the attendance award, the punctuality award. But everything, even today, built around those times tables and the sort of grand finals and things. And as I said, when Reese Dinsdale came in 2 weeks ago, he was flabbergasted, you know, with the speed. Now, as I said, we build everything on times tables. If you go into year one in a maths lessons, they're going to be doing arrays of threes. They're not going to be doing the 12 times table and things, but we use these times in when they're getting changed for PE or when they're getting ready to go out for afternoon break. So it's totally separate from the sort of maths lesson, but as a sense of fun and celebration. And to keep the interest going, when they get to year three, key stage two, because they know all the times tables, you know, and this is why seeing is believing and getting yourself up to see these children. We had to keep the interest level going. We had to keep the sort of interest level going. So we started doing number bond times tables, which is if I say six tens, oh, we want the answer 40. Or if we have asked for seven sevens, we want 51. So their children had to do the times table and then subtract it from 100. And these kids are doing it just like I'm clicking my fingers now and that. It brings awe and wonder, and for visitors, it's absolutely mesmerising and things.
And it's brilliant to see them singing as well, Chris, when they're coming into assemblies. You know, and I'm not knocking anybody who does this in terms of silent corridors and things like that, but a time when you've got that and, you know, they're singing Sweet Caroline or whatever it is as they're coming into assembly, filling in with joy to start that fun day Friday.
Well, lovely Tom McFly, Tom Fletcher, you know, when we were singing Transylvania from McFly, here every Friday we're retweeting, and it's in the book, his tweet's in the book and things, you just... Q scan it or whatever they call it, and he's calling it, look at my lovely minion army this week and things. And when the kids are getting messages from, you know, Tom Fletcher, it's uplifting for them and things.
Absolutely. So I'm just going to get into looking about your staff now, Chris, as well. So I know that at the end of the book as well, you've paid a lovely tribute, haven't you, to your IT technician, Jason. Obviously, and in terms of the staff at Parkland are very much part of your community and hugely important to you, the parents and the students as well. So when you got there, how did you kind of go and build on getting a new team from what was, you know, essentially a broken one? And is it true, and I love this quote, that the more you can do for the adults, the more they're going to do for the children?
Oh, massively so. I mean, so as I said, I'd come from a staff room, you know, into a new work environment with 63 staff. But I wanted everyone to feel valued. That's the office staff, the kitchen staff, the cleaners, TAs, learning mentors, as well as the teachers. So we had our first training time. And as I said, I had to pick these staff up because their experience of head teachers walking in the rooms and the local authority walking in the rooms. When I first started walking around, it were like rabbits in headlights for some. It were like, oh, what are we going to get done for today? And it's like, no, I walk around all the time. And it were getting that, they thought they were going to get into trouble because of the previous experience had been the head teacher only comes in your room to give you a telling off and things. So it was a case of taking the staff with me. And I always have these far out wild ideas. And I thought, right, first training day. And we were lucky we were having a new school roof put on, which had overrun by 4 days. So we had 4 extra days in school for me to get to know the staff, for us to be up, ready to get that key message across. And then I said on the Friday, right, everyone at school at 9:30. And for the younger members of staff, they were like, a lion, brilliant. I said, we're at school at 9:30. We get on a coach and we're going team building. They're like, where are we going? And I didn't tell anyone. So we all jumped on the bus and that was everyone, TAs, teachers, office staff. And we went to Hazelwood Castle over near York, where we did archery, clay pigeon shooting, welly wanging and things like that to bring the team together. It was a beautiful, hot, sunny, gorgeous day. And then we got back on the coach and the staff I could see were nice and happy thinking, you know, we don't want to be doing all day English, all day maths, all day reading to change standards. We wanted to just get to know each other and things. So we got back on the bus and the staff were saying, should we all go into town now and have some drinks and, you know, and you know, carry on the team building and things. But what they didn't know is that that was only part of the day. So we jumped on the bus and we headed towards York, where I'd hired out one of the big, massive River Ouse boats that you can get just for us. And as I said, there weren't a cloud in the sky. It was absolutely glorious. And there was a bar on board and the staff had said, are we allowed to have a drink? I said, do what you want today. We're just here to get to know each other and things. So we cruised down the River Ouse. And then as we turned round to come back, we pulled into a pub where I'd pre-ordered a two-course meal. No alcohol, obviously, because you can't be buying things like that. And we basically had a meal together. And I had TAs that were in tears saying, we've never been invited on anything like this before. And I thought, well, you have now, because we're all in this together and we all need to be pulling the same way, you know. And empowering the staff that way had a huge impact from day one, because they trusted and they believed. And then, as I said, doing the modelling lessons and working with staff was also great. And then I brought in something that I'd always wanted to do as a deputy, but I never had the final say in things. I wanted to bring in Lou Days. And I remember pulling my governors in saying, right, I'm taking on two non-class-based teachers and two Hilters. And they said, you can't afford that. I said, I'll tell you how I'm going to afford it. Look how much money we spent on supply last year. 180 grand. So when I started here, I was getting chocolate parcels. I was getting wine delivered. I was getting flowers from all the supply companies, because they can tap into your budget to see how much you spend on supply. And I said, we're going to use that money. And you know, in the last 6 years, and this includes all COVID, I've not spent a penny on supply, because I said, right, now I've got these non-class-based teachers, plus myself, plus my deputy, then people can start having loo days. So if you do the 5-day residential, you get 2 loo days. If you do a 3-day residential, you get a day in loo. Everybody gets a day in loo for goodwill. And because we'd changed the team building day to the last Friday before we come back to school, so if staff want to come on it, they get a loo day. If they want to stay with the families, or if they're still on holiday, they can do that. So now it gets to a stage where teachers can build up days off. And that has had an absolute... So it is a bit of a gamble, you know, because people are saying, how do you get to cover? But as I said, there's 6 people who can cover these people. And it just gives that goodwill, because I go back to... I won't say the year or the school, because I still might get done. But my housemate, who I lived with for 4 years, was getting married. But because he wasn't a teacher, he was getting married on a Friday. And I had one of those head teachers where if I asked to go to the wedding, it might have been, and I couldn't afford to do that because I was an usher. So I thought, I'm going to have to take a sick day. And then to make it more realistic, I had to make it a 2-day sick day. And I thought, when I come head, I don't want people to ring up sick. I want them to be able to use these days that they've earned. And they've, you know, if you're away on a residential for 5 days, you deserve a couple of days for working 24 hours for the time. And the impact on sort of sickness. So sickness days fall from 618 down to basically, I probably have, if you exclude COVID cases and isolating and things, I'm down to about 5-6 days between all the staff a year now, because people don't have to ring up sick. They can use the days that are there to benefit them. So I've got a lovely Canadian teacher in school who, when her parents come over, might want to use a couple of days with them without, oh, I'm not coming in today because my throat's bad and things. So again, the staff loved it, how I valued them and things. And, you know, tiny little things like, even though we were under pressure from the local authority to change standards rounds, the first thing I said was, I don't want your short-term plans. I don't want your weekly plans in. And they went, what do you mean? We've always had to hand them in on a Friday and then we get them back on a Sunday, all annotated what we've got to change. I'm saying, I trust you. You know, I trust you to do the best you can. You've still got a plan, but I don't need to go through all your planning and things. And so straight away, I was on board with the staff, because I understood the well-being, understood the pressures and things. And I just wanted them to feel valued for the adventure that was going to go on.
Absolutely. I mean, you're a great voice, Chris, for well-being. And I obviously follow you on Twitter and seen a lot of stuff that you've done. But I watched you talk at a teaching conference where you talked quite powerfully about the fact that you missed a lot of what your son was doing when he was growing up. And you talked about, you know, you weren't able to get to the cricket game or the football match or all those kind of things. And you actually thought that you, and correct me if I got this wrong, but I think your daughter, did she go to your school? Is that right?
She came to my school in year three, but when she was back in reception, and it still hurts me this, you know, she got the part of Oopsie Daisy Angel in Oopsie Daisy Angel. And of course, in reception, you don't have an 8 o'clock performance and things. In reception, it's 9 o'clock in the morning, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And I remember saying to my head, "Your daughter's Oopsie Daisy Angel. Can I go and see her in it?" And I remember saying, "Oh, who's going to teach your class?" So I missed that sort of performance. So, but it all turned out brilliant because when, as I said, she came to my school at the start of year three, best thing ever that for my well-being, you know, spending that quality time with my daughter, travelling to school, coming home from school. If I had a meeting late on at night, then my wife would come and pick her up. But it gave me time with her when she was growing up and needing it. But when she was in year six, I put on High School Musical, you know, and it's because my beautiful deputy was on maternity leave. And I said to the year six staff, "I'll do the Christmas concert this year and I'm doing High School Musical." They all laughed their socks off. But I like that challenge. I had to choreography 13 different dance routines. But our Daisy ended up playing Sharpay, you know, and singing. So I managed to not only see that, and we ended up playing that show about 7-8 times because the entire community wanted to come and see it and things. So it all ended up well. But again, as I say to my staff, now you don't even have to fill a pink form in. If you've got a Christmas concert, your child's in, if you've got a sports fixture you want to go and see, you know, then I'll pop in. Someone will cover to get you to. Because we talk well-being, and you know, we sometimes neglect our own sort of families and things. So it's important that the staff know something to look forward to, and their own little children when they see the mums and dads sort of walk in. You know, it melts your heart.
Well, I mean, it's so important. There's two things on that. One, speaking as a leader now, I mean, I try to model it myself, Chris. You know, sometimes once a week at least, I'll go and try and get out and pick up my daughter for after school club. Because, I mean, not to bore people with my geography, but I'm working Blackpool, but they live in Burnley. So I've got to get across there. And then, you know, people will see me leaving. But actually, there's a good reason, and I'll explain it. And it's good that they want that as well. And I've been fortunate to work for head teachers before who've done exactly the same thing. I've been to Christmas concerts. And I'll tell you what you're saying there. You know, your lad's getting older. They don't need you quite so much then, do they? You've got to get it in, listeners, definitely, while you can. Because if you miss that Christmas concert, it doesn't happen again, does it?
My 18-year-old's off to university in September, bless him, down to Sheffield, because we're both big Sheffield United fans and things. But, you know, even though I missed him, and Daisy is a reader, just reads, although she just started playing for the netball team, which is great. My son's the other way, really dislikes school, although he's going to get his A-levels this year, which is great. But he was sporting god, and I missed out, and he didn't like school at all. I think he's right saying he hated school. Especially his primary time, when I thought it was the best time ever, even as a child, especially as a teacher and things. But I missed out on all those. But I ran his football team from under fours to under 14s. And I ran with the football teams. And this were a great sort of learning curve becoming a head teacher, because dealing with parents at football level when you've got fantastic teams and things. But I ran four different teams. I had my A team that won everything, that had all the brilliant players in. I had my B team that won the Division 2 of that league. And then I had my C and my D team, where people who just wanted to come round and play football and kick a ball. So to make sure everyone was involved.
Naylor's Natter the Book. Ideas and advice from the collective wisdom of teachers. Naylor's Natter brings together a wealth of advice from the most influential voices in education today. In this exciting, one-of-a-kind book, Phil Naylor revisits the very best interviews from 3 years of education podcasting, drawing on the advice and opinions from some of the world's most innovative educators. Available now for pre-order from Amazon and out on July 7th, 2022.
And I said I'd run his football team from under fours to under 14s when I became a head, and thought I'll pass that on. But last Sunday that's just gone was his very, very final game at under 18s. Sort of junior level. So he's done the entire run from under fours to under 18s. He's played over 650 games, scored over 100 goals, and I've been blessed. I've seen all of those. He's never missed a Sunday ever from when he was four, as I said. So,
and that's not bad, because he's a centre half, isn't he, Chris? I've heard. So, you know, that's not bad, is it, getting all those goals from there?
So no, he plays like Jack Grealish. You know, he gets booted from head to toe every single game. You know, but he gets up, shows the right attitude. Because one thing I never had when I ran my teams, and even though I had really successful teams, if anyone said anything to the referee, even at that age, they came straight off. You know, if parents were shouting at referee, I went across and I told them to move back 20, 30 metres, because the respect to the ref, no referee, no games. You know, and I'm so proud that I instilled that into all my players. So, and it was beautiful on last Sunday, as I said, because out of the 16 lads playing last Sunday, 12 of them I'd had from under fours onwards and things. So a beautiful end. And they won 5-3.
Well, there you go. And I've got nothing but good things to say about Sheffield United, having had one of my greatest experiences at Sheffield United as a Wigan supporter. But you won't have thought it was quite such a good day when David Unsworth smashed David that penalty Unsworth in.
Ex-player.
It wasn't such a good day for you, but never mind. Never mind.
But good luck for you. Good luck for you this season. I think you're going to pip Leeds and things to stay up and things. So
I'm going to say, we've been through it all. Right, so let's get on to. So we talked about obviously your staff, but talk about parents, community, and family. Now, you know, the amount of work that you and your staff did during the pandemic in terms of serving your community, you know, was absolutely amazing. The lengths that the staff have gone to for that. But this is something that wasn't just something for the pandemic. You've been doing this all the way through, and you talk about it in the chapter in the book. So tell listeners a little bit about your Christmas extravaganza.
Well, it was my very first year here at Parklands, 2014, and I was walking around seeing who'd been to see Santa that weekend, and I found just a handful of kids. So I pulled my senior staff in and said, we're opening school this year, Christmas Day, and we're going to give them a Christmas dinner and give them a selection box. And they went, nobody will work Christmas Day. And you've got to listen. They were right. Nobody do Christmas Day. So I pulled them in the next day. I said, I've got another plan. They're going, oh, yeah, what is it this time? I said, we're going to do Christmas Eve. Or we're going to do Christmas Eve Eve. Because I thought it's every child's right to see Santa at Christmas. So it was Mike Harvey, the inspiration at Business in the Community, who saw what I was doing and said, Chris, we'll get some proper presents. You know, you don't have to get these selection boxes. And to be fair, they got me 300 footballs, reading books, colouring things, Lego sets and things. So every child who came that Christmas were going home with a quality present. We had a roast. We had Christmas dinner in the dining hall, which I suddenly had to change and tell a bit of a fib because none of the kids liked turkey. So I said, turkey, that's chicken. And they went, oh, it's best chicken. This is beautiful chicken, this, and things. And it's grown and it's grown and it's grown up till the point now where when we do it now, we have 800 parents in, all the community, you know, grandparents, aunties, uncles, kids from other schools. And it's the businesses. We get about 25 grand donated from businesses because they want to see you going that extra mile at a time when, you know, when it's Christmas time, it's the time for giving. And the businesses are only too glad to sort of help out and share the money to make a difference in things. The lovely Liz Lightfoot at The Guardian heard about it and came down to do a feature on it. And then Sky News, the Sarah Neemade show, got to hear about it and said, can you come on the show at 4:15? It ended up being the interview of the week, which meant it appeared every hour all weekend. We came back into school. We'd had 30 grand donated from around the world, you know, into the money, to make these kids' lives sort of better and things. So, and again, for the community, you know, they're coming up and they're having smiles. And we've even linked now. So this year we did it with Northern Ballet. And Northern Ballet is one of the top two ballet troupes in the country. And they sent 18 of their workers to build the exact stage that they build at the Grand Theatre in Leeds. And it took them 16 hours to build this exact replica of the stage. So as well as having unicorns in the hall and snow machines, you know, and real life reindeers outside, they get to see a bit of ballet and then they go for the meal and then they're off to see Santa. So it's just grown and it's grown and it's grown. And when you've got these really tough, hard year six boys who are taller than us, you know, walking up the yard going, look at them donkeys with sticks on their head. It's like, they're not donkeys, they're reindeers. And they didn't know reindeers were real. They thought they were fictional. So again, just adding that cultural capital to the life and things, and it makes it absolutely heartwarming. So on Christmas Day, when we're there loading it with our own families, drinking merrily, eating non-stop chocolate and things, just gives you that sense of sort of well-being and enormous pride that you've done something for the community at a time that's very difficult for some families and things. And that's just exploded now. So now we open school up every single holiday for 2 or 3 days. And we give them experiences, you know, Leeds Rhinos, down to Northern Ballet, Flamingoland, bowling, jump arena and things. Having chefs that come into school and work with the parents and the children on making meals and things. It's absolutely beautiful.
It really is. And you've captured it really well in terms of the book that you've talked about there. And just last couple of questions, Chris, if you don't mind. So in terms of the business bit, one of the things that's maybe put me off, I suppose, looking at head teacher jobs is not necessarily any of the teaching and learning, any of that kind of thing. It's been the finances and it's been the buildings. And obviously you're situated in a 1920s building and you kind of inherited that, which, you know, needs repair. So just tell us a little bit about what you did in terms of the, in the chapter, taking care of business. So tell us about how you kind of engage local businesses, because it's right now that obviously you're saying that people volunteer stuff, but that wasn't always the case, was it? You had to kind of put a lot of effort into developing those relationships. So tell us a little bit about how you did that and the effect it's had for the children.
Well, again, as I said, I've mentioned it before, it was a chap called Mike Harvey from Business in the Community who said, Chris, we've got all these business volunteers and everyone who works multinational or a national company, you know, they're allowed to do 2 days volunteering here and they want projects to do that stimulates them. They want to get away from their high-powered desk jobs and things. So I said, bring them out of my school, these corridors to decorate, these, you know, these fences to sort of paint, there's everything, these gymnasiums to paint, these halls to paint. So I started working with these businesses on there, and all the things that I did prior to COVID meant when COVID hit, all the sort of jigsaw came together. Because we bring in an unprecedented around about 450 grand a year from businesses. Now, that's not all in cash, but it's like such as if I've got a quote to decorate my gymnasium for 15 grand and decorate my school hall for 20 grand, I get businesses to come and do it. And they pay for the entire lot. I'm not going for snagging with them. You know, and you touched on with the great decorating project when I got in touch with GMB at, who were doing Thorpe Arch, who happened to have Kevin McCabe as their CEO, and he was the chairman of Sheffield United at the time. So I just, again, I don't mind people saying no. I just wrote to him and said, look, when you've got all these apprentices practicing painting, so they're painting on a wall and the next day someone whitewashes it off and then someone else, bring them into my school, you know, get them to do a real life project, decorate my school. Anyway, he loved it so much they shut down the entire Thorpe Arch project for 2 days, and their entire workforce came in and they said the only thing you've got to pay for is your paint. And I thought that's easy, because when you've got jobs like that, it's the labor cost that costs you the most. I was live on Radio 5 Live and I accidentally said, and then Durex got to hear about it, so provided all the paint, but I meant to say Dulux and things. So there's one for your listeners. And then Thorn Lighting came in and said, look at that awful lighting you've got in school with these beautiful classrooms now. We'll come and put you 200 grand's worth of lighting all through your school. Just send us a tweet, write us a letter of thanks and things. So it was thinking out the box and not being afraid to ask for something in case I said no. But it's important not to send a blanket email out to 900,000 companies, just unpersonal. It's about getting the finding the right person, finding the community champion that they all have and bringing them in. And as I said, all these sort of business contacts when COVID hit led us to May the 22nd, 2020, and it was my daughter's 12th birthday. And I got given a challenge from my great friend, Adam Smith from the Real Junk Food Project, who said, Chris, there's only you can do this. McCain's oven chips place over near Scarborough have said we can have 19 tons of food. Now, 19 tons of food is 35,000 meals. And they said, Chris, can you shift that in a day? Now, May the 22nd, 2020, and first lockdown, we were blessed by having unprecedented weather. You know, it was glorious. And I thought, I've got a problem now because I'm going to have 35,000 meals to get rid of. And it's roasting outside, and obviously it's frozen stuff. So I got in touch with, and this was where all the business contacts came, and I got in touch with Dennis Distribution, who sent over a refrigerated freezer truck over to Catonby to pick all the stock up so it didn't defrost. Then 3 days before, I thought, how on earth am I going to get off? How on earth am I going to get 35,000 meals, 19 tons of food off the back of a refrigerated lorry? So I got in touch with the Mansfield Group, who we've worked with, and they sent me down 3 of the hardest lads I've ever seen in my life. They basically brought a forklift truck down and they got it all off in about 45 minutes. It was just awe and wonder watching them. And I got to drive a forklift truck. Best not tell anyone that because I don't have my qualification and think so. And we got it all off and we shifted the entire lot. We had buses coming from Wakefield, from Barnsley, from Sheffield. We had 2.5 mile queues around the estate because it weren't just for our community, it was for everybody, you know, and we shifted the absolute lot. Happiest day that of my life. But there's more. As I then got in touch with with Costa Coffee and said, what are you doing with all your stock now? We're on lockdown and you can't open. They said, we'll have to bin it all. I said, I'll have it. Yeah. So I emptied out one of the Costa Coffee shops, tweeted about it. The CEO got to here. He said, you can empty out every store in the north of England. So our parents, our staff were having Costa Coffees, you know, the best, all the toasted sandwiches, all that was flooding in every week. So instead of having hashtag Fun Day Friday at the Fun Palace, we changed it to Fun Day Freezer Friday. Because all these parents were coming and getting just loads of frozen stuff, Costa Coffee stuff. Then our great friends at Yorkshire Tea sent me two huge vans through with 100,000 boxes of tea bags, you know, which again, our community had, and who don't love a bit of Yorkshire Tea? Boom. Digestives from, we're having unlimited McVitie's digestive sent up every week. You know, it was absolutely amazing how all these business links came together in a time of need. And that's why I had the happiest parents during lockdown, because it was just non-stop food and non-stop high-quality food as well. So absolutely brilliant.
But all that just speaks to your passion for the profession, for your community, for your students and everything else. And that's what comes through, listener, in the book. So before we ask Chris the last question in a second, we'll just give you a reminder. So I've got it on the camera there. So there we are. Parkland's a School Built on Love, and it's a Crown House book. Now, the question, Chris, I'm going to finish off with is, well, one, are there any available still? Where can listeners get them from? Can you signpost us to where we can follow you on Twitter and other social media? And are you going out and about speaking about this? And can I just do one signpost, listener? Chris has done a podcast with Toria on Tiny Voice Talks, so that's going to be very much worth, well worth a listen. I've been on that show as well. It's a great show. Love Toria, so shout out to that as well. So,
brilliant.
Yeah, Chris,
lovely,
where can we get it from?
Can't believe she's 50. My goodness, nearly fell off my sofa when she told me. Oh, but don't mention that. She might not know anyone. No, nobody might not know that. But
we'll
a wonderful
cut, we'll cut that section. We'll cut that section.
So, well, I'm easy to follow on Twitter. I'm Chris Dyson, HT. I'm doing a sort of book launch with the Ed Round Tables group on July the 8th in Birmingham, which I know there's still tickets available for there. The books, so Crown House sent me a lovely email yesterday saying, this is unprecedented, Chris, we've run out of books, you know, so we're going for the second print. Now, when they run out of book, that means they're down to the last few thousands and things. So it's going for its second print after only a week, which is, as I said, quite unprecedented. But there are still some available at Crown House Publication, which is sort of free post as well. And I know that Amazon have still got limited sort of stock left, but touch wood by next week, everyone's back to full capacity, as it were. So, and as I said, it's really touched me, because when you write a book, you don't do it to sell it. You just want to put your words down for people to share and to hopefully take something with. But it's gone absolutely. It's just exploded, you know. And it's, as I said, that's testimony to all my brilliant staff that I've got here, and most importantly, if it wasn't for these beautiful children at Parklands, this book would have never been written and produced and things. So,
absolutely. And thank you, Chris, for your time today. Because obviously, for those who are watching us on the video podcast, we'll see that we're both still in school. Really appreciate your time. It's a brilliant book. I recommend everybody to go out and get it if you can. And follow Chris on social media and get yourself to that book launch. Chris Dyson, thank you. Been a pleasure.
Absolute beautiful. Really enjoyed it. What a perfect end to SATs. Talking about love. And that's the original piece of artwork done from my lovely Tom Cunliffe, my year four teacher. So,
brilliant. Thanks, Chris.
Absolute pleasure.
Nailers Natter, just talking to teachers.
Talking to teachers about academic research and evidence-based practice with continuing professional development at PNA 1977 on Twitter.
Nailers Natter, just talking to teachers.